This is the one set in modern-day Cardiff.
Featuring the not-so-long-awaited return
of Wanda Savine,
who has a fiendish plan to create one hell of a
boomtown.
Here we go.
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Daleks, Cybers, and Dude, wow!
Tennant, Smith, and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha, and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than Who back when? Who back when?
Hello and welcome to episode N011 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin, and joining me tonight, as always on these new Who adventures, is JD.
Hello.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm fine here at N011.
Oh, you're one of those, are you? Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, today we will be reviewing Boomtown, which is an Eccleston New Who episode. And even though it features the Smithine, spoiler alert, I gotta say, I don't hate it as much as I perhaps ought to.
I have some slight problems with some bits of the episode.
Okay, I have some slight problems as well. I will say that. But even though, you know, there's less farting, there's more character.
Oh, no disagreement there.
Yeah, which is good.
Once we get past the sort of like, gonna say the pre-title things, but like the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no fart jokes. So.
Yeah. Oh, really? So once we get past about half of the episode, everything beyond that point is great.
not quite. Shall we jump into a beast scow?
Let's do that. The Doc, Jack, and Rose land in Cardiff, where Mickey is ready to be all doe-eyed over Rose, but he doesn't get time to mope as the Doc and the TARDIS team are embroiled in the plans of Margaret of the Slitheen to destroy Cardiff and send herself back off into outer space to continue her evil deeds.
But the rift in space-time is causing problems, and the whole of Wales is threatened when a super high-tech surfboard sends the TARDIS into overdrive.
So the Doc must have dinner with the enemy, where Margaret begs for her life, and it all comes down to the question, does the Doctor have the right to kill?
You're welcome.
Kablamo. That's one hell of a beast cow. I mean, seriously, guys, you're welcome. And full credit to JD who wrote it. Okie dokie. Do you want to start us off?
Pre-credits. We get a recap of Aliens in London and World War III.
Yep.
And then we get Margaret Blaine, poor man's M, as the Lord Mayor of Cardiff. And she's sort of having a little chat with a guy called Cleaver, who isn't happy with her new project.
Yeah. Can I ask a question right off the bat?
You can ask one, yes. And okay. Then I've got a statement.
Okay. Why is she still wearing the same human body?
Yeah, I have a problem with this. Okay, we'll start now.
I thought you might. Right? Yeah. Okay, right. Go for it.
I have a problem with this because, A, why is she wearing the same one is a valid question.
I think so.
Apart from the getting Annette Badland back. Number two, by this point, if she is not already, she will be very shortly. Harriet Jones, MP for Flydale North, is going to be Prime Minister, if she is not already at this point.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And she knows Blaine, poor man's M.
Yeah, she would recognise
her. On sight.
Yeah.
And it is unbelievable that the Lord Mayor of Cardiff, who is, as we find out later, going to demolish Cardiff Castle and build a nuclear power station inside the heart of Cardiff,
yeah,
has not been seen by the Prime Minister.
Yeah, exactly. Very soon, spoiler alert, she's going to be photographed by some journalist or some photojournalist, and she just goes, oh, she tries to cover her face and she's, oh, no photos. I don't like having my face in public. You are the freaking Lord Mayor. People must have voted for this person. Like, at some point, people were introduced to her. There is no way that she got to where she is now without ever being seen. And no, consequently being recognised.
Yeah, someone should recognise her, especially Harry Jones.
Yeah.
For Flydale North. She's talking to a guy called Cleaver.
Yes.
Now, Cleaver...
Oh my god, I can feel a trivia alert coming up.
Oh, can you now?
Yeah.
Cleaver has been in Doctor Who before, and he's not actually just been in New Who. Okay. He's been in Classic Who as well.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Cleaver is played by William Thomas, who played Martin the Undertaker in the Sylvester McCoy episode Remembrance of the Daleks.
Not bad. Well done him.
He's one of the very few people who's sort of done both Classic and New Who.
Yeah, very good.
And of course, Annette Bavin's been in Doctor Who before, but...
Yeah, sure.
We will be discussing this at great length. So, long story short, she kills Cleaver.
Yeah, exactly. He expresses some concern regarding the design of this nuclear power plant, and even says it's almost as though it had been built with the express intention of it exploding or, you know, blowing up. And when she finds out that he hasn't told anyone else, Kablamatron, she unzips. By the way, yes, she has a zip on her forehead again. And we actually see the zip this time.
Yes.
There is an actual zip. Like, she might as well be wearing a pair of trousers on her face. And Kablamo, she eats him, or kills him anyway. Then we cut to the TARDIS, which materializes, right? Yeah. Okay, opening credit sequence, still out of sync. And then the TARDIS materializes in Cardiff.
Yep, in Cardiff Bay.
I've never been.
It materializes practically where Torchwood will be based.
Exactly. It's right above the headquarters.
Mickey arrives.
I know.
And knocks on the door of the TARDIS.
my note as well here, literally my note is, first thing we see post-opening credit sequence is Mickey Ricky, .. Also, this was produced by Phil Collins, It was produced by Phil Collins,
Son.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I had a good chuckle at that.
Anyway, Rose apparently asked Mickey to bring a passport down for no apparent reason.
I disagree. I reckon Rose has realized it's been quite a while since she got laid. Hence, and Mickey Ricky, he's just like a sure thing. Boom. Yeah, I need my passport.
But why has the TARDIS arrived? Why has it come here to Cardiff, not to the Powell estate?
Okay, so it's arrived because they need to recharge the TARDIS. And in order... No? Oh.
Yes. Oh, no. Yes. Okay, well... This is where my big problem is.
Oh, really? Okay, well, the way I got it was they need to recharge the TARDIS, which is a first in New Who anyway, and they aim to do this using, I guess, sort of low-level radiation in the area.
Yeah, it's not just a first in New Who, it's a first and last in Who.
Really? So they never need to recharge it?
No, there is, the TARDIS is powered by something called the Eye of Harmony.
Yeah.
Now, the Eye of Harmony was in the TARDIS as late as Doctor Who the movie, the Paul McGann.
Yeah, I remember you saying
this. And it is there again in the Matt Smith episode Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS. So, in short, it has never actually gone away. This refueling nonsense is a plot device written by Russell T. Davis when he was high. Allegedly. You know, or something. Because it doesn't make any sense before or after. Had they have sort of said, well, now that the Time War has gone on, Gallifrey's been destroyed, then TARDIS has now need to refuel. Mm-hmm. That became fine, and that was what was thought of after this episode, until Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS, when it was revealed the miniature black hole, the Eye of Harmony, is still in the TARDIS. Therefore, the fan assumption that because Gallifrey had been destroyed, TARDIS has now needed to refuel, was completely blown out of the water by Stephen Moffat and his crew.
I quite prefer that solution, to be honest.
Which one?
Not having to refuel it, just having been sort of perpetually, yeah, exactly.
Well, it's powered by the event horizon of a black hole.
Yeah, we even get to see it at one point.
Yeah. In short, therefore, this episode is the one which makes no sense.
Right, well, and we are off to a great start with this one.
Yeah, and then for people who are hard of thinking, Rose completely summarizes The Unquiet Dead to Mickey in about three sentences, explaining why there is this rift in space-time in Cardiff. She summarizes The Unquiet Dead.
Yeah, I've got a note about that as well. That wasn't in Cardiff, was it?
No.
Exactly. Bingo, there you go.
It wasn't in Cardiff.
Yeah.
The rift has somehow moved from where it was in the Undertaker's shop miles outside of Cardiff to being in Cardiff.
Right smack in the centre. Yeah, exactly.
Where it will remain.
Yeah, I was going to ask, will it remain exactly there throughout all of Torchwood as well? I can't really remember that. Okay. Well, fair enough. Yeah, there's, I guess, more going on in Cardiff than wherever the Undertaker's was.
Yes, but it is said that she actually says, Gwen, you know, was the conduit. This is where the rift is.
Yeah.
No.
Nope. Good.
No, you're right.
Vindicated. My note was not a waste of ink.
But Dr. Rose and Jack at this point are high-fiving everywhere, and they've obviously been travelling together
for
a lot more than the end of the last episode.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I am enjoying the banter, like the rapport that they have in the TARDIS. I'm really enjoying it, especially the alpha male competition between Captain Jack and the Doctor.
Yeah, he's doing well, and John Barrowman and Christopher Eccleston obviously seem to enjoy acting together.
Yeah.
Although John Barrowman can, in fact, seemingly act with anyone, so it's unsurprising.
He is a super charismatic guy.
Yes.
Anyway.
So, anyway, Mickey, Jack, Doc, and Rose go outside, and then we get the Doctor explaining the chameleon circuit.
Yeah,
which is anyone that hasn't watched Doctor Who since 1963.
Yeah, exactly. This is a first in New Who, right?
Yes.
And what does he list? Does he list the exact same examples? He lists some of the same examples anyway that Susan listed in An Unearthly Child.
Well, he says, well, I think the more problem here that we have is Mickey has never seen or heard of a police box.
Yeah, well, presumably quite a few people in 2005 had never heard of a police box either. Yeah. So we do get not just an explanation of what the chameleon circuitry is, we get an explanation of what an actual police box is, even down to the point where he goes, well, they could call the police from there, and you could even lock criminals in there and use it as a makeshift cell.
Yeah, and there's an interesting aside here.
Okay.
Which was a few years ago, when Doctor Who became popular again.
Yeah.
The BBC turned around and patented the look of a police box. Trademarked the look of a police box.
Is that actually even possible?
Yes, because the trademark was for use in merchandising with Doctor Who.
But there were police boxes that weren't time-travelling devices.
Yeah, and in 1998, the Met objected to it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Basically turning around and saying, well, hold on, we actually own the rights to police boxes because, you know, we invented them.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of in the name.
And then in 2002, actually, before the new season, so it was post-McGann, before the new season began,
mm-hmm.
The patent office actually turned around and said, no, the trademark can actually belong to the BBC.
Wow.
For two reasons. The first one is the police has never, ever trademarked the look of a police box.
Okay.
And number two, it is more commonly associated with Doctor Who than police.
Yeah. No, fair enough. Which perfectly validates the Doctor's explanation of what a police box used to be.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Anyway, so let's get back to the story. They say we need to recharge the TARDIS, yada, yada, yada. That's going to take about a day. Let's head off and all bond and be merry. So they go and have a meal in a restaurant. I hate this scene.
Before they have their meal.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
We head over to Margaret because, Margaret's more interesting at the moment.
Oh, shit. You're right. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Yes, yes, yes.
And Margaret is explaining what the Blythe Droog project is.
Yeah.
And this is where she gets pissed off that she gets her photograph taken.
Yes, you're right. You're right. Sorry.
And I have a couple of problems, oddly enough, with this scene as well.
Okay.
She says that they're building a nuclear power station in the heart of Cardiff.
Yeah. And no one seems to object, by the way.
That's number one.
Yeah. Okay.
And they're demolishing Cardiff Castle.
No one seems to object.
This is my problem.
Okay.
Because although we find out later that she has killed the European Safety Inspection Team, the person who designed this, the nuclear advisor, and probably half a dozen other people.
Yeah.
You can't get planning permission to put a new shed up without people in the street complaining. She could not physically have killed everyone that complained about a nuclear power station in Cardiff.
Yeah, and there's actually no suspicion thrown her way either. I mean, she has a conversation with this journalist, and the journalist, when this journalist is listing all the people who weirdly, mysteriously have died in conjunction, or people who were connected to the power plant who have mysteriously died, one of the explanations that Margaret gives, or excuses that she gives, is, but it was dark and, like, my driver couldn't see clearly or something. So she actually ran over one of these guys.
Yeah.
She couldn't be more connected to the death of this person.
So anyway, this investigative journalist.
Yeah. Oh, I hate this scene. God, I hate this scene.
Who actually does seem to be an investigative journalist.
Yeah.
Turns around and says, well, the nuclear power guy posted on the internet web some of his concerns and his files, and she got access to them. And it looks like the Blythe Droog project could kill everyone in Cardiff.
Yeah. So Margaret goes, let's go for a little walk.
And they fart off towards the bathroom.
Oh, I hate this. I absolutely hate this scene. I'm gonna... Okay, please go on with this scene.
No. Please. If you hate it, I think you should describe
this
scene.
Are you sure? I'm sorry. I don't want to bog out the microphone here.
Go ahead.
I'm really sorry. I absolutely effing hate this scene. So they go for a little walk, and then we get the trademark Slovene family tummy rumble from Margaret. She goes, oh, I'm really sorry. It must have been, well, you know, I hardly ever get a chance to eat or whatever it is, she says. I'm just going to nip off to the ladies, and convinces this journalist to tag along with her. So she goes into a toilet stall, locks the door behind her, and starts undressing, essentially, like undressing her human form, taking off her human skin suit, whilst having a conversation with the journalist outside. During this conversation, the most horrendously disgusting farting and, like, stomach-belching noises are emanating from the stall, and they are having what ends up being kind of a personal conversation, like a private conversation. So, number one, the reason I hate this scene, and I hate it for two reasons, surprisingly. Number one, there is no other assumption that the journalist can make whilst having this private conversation, this intimate conversation with Margaret, than that Margaret is dropping the sloppiest deuce ever and clearly should not be spoken to at this point. That's number one. And number two, Margaret has plans to kill everyone, right? She wants to blow up the entire planet, starting with Cardiff, but she's going to blow up the planet. We've already heard what her plan was in World War III. But when the journalist says, oh, I have a little child, well, what is it? She's pregnant. Yeah, she's pregnant and she's getting married and blah, blah, blah. When she says this, Margaret gets all sentimental, puts her skin suit back on, and decides, you know what? I can't kill a pregnant woman. Well, fuck you, Margaret. You plan on killing everyone. Do you think this pregnant lady who, for some reason, stood around and listened to you shit will be spared? No, she's gonna die in the blast that kills everyone. Anyway, that's it. Got it out of my system, just like Margaret did. Ugh, hate it.
Okay. They almost make me feel sorry for Margaret during the scene.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's the point.
Yeah. It humanizes her.
Unfortunately, she vacillates too much between being sort of a tragic character to being just downright evil, that you don't know what she's going to be at any one point. And let's be honest, Annette Badland is doing a good job here.
Yeah, she is. I don't doubt her acting ability.
But you're right. In the grand scheme of things, this scene makes no sense when taken in the larger whole that we get to later.
Larger whole. Okay. Sorry.
You know, while we're talking about Margaret, you know, I was just getting ready to, you know, to just ask a question about a pronunciation.
Oh, God damn it. Okay.
How do you pronounce her full name?
Do you mean Blonfell Fortspassimir Deslevine? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
I've been practicing another one as well, by the way.
That's fine. But, you know, she's obviously now complaining about her brothers.
Yeah. Oh, I don't remember their names.
Can you pronounce their names?
I'm sorry. Oh, I should have delved deeper in my practice. I knew that you were going to call me on some sort of pronunciation thing. I knew it.
after farting aliens of London, yeah. Go on, you've been practicing.
I don't remember the other family members at all.
No, the planet.
Oh, Raxacorico Falipatorian. Or Falipatorius is the planet, yeah.
There you go. Yeah, the other one was Jocrasta Felfoch Pasmina de Slovene.
Nice. I'm not worthy. I am not worthy. Okie dokie. So, whatever. She excuses herself, tells the journalist, you know what, I'm probably going to be in here a while, which, by the way, gross. And the journalist leaves. And then, I think, then we cut to the doctor and Cole, right?
Oh, yeah, we do.
Okay. So now they're having their little meal.
And obviously some time has passed since they went for the meal, because Mickey, even at this point, Mickey actually now seems to be enjoying himself.
Yeah.
And he and Captain Jack seem to be getting along.
Yeah, they're like finishing each other's sentences.
They actually become quite good friends, because they're shown to be fairly good friends in Journey's End.
Oh, okay. That I do not remember, but I'm looking forward to being reminded of it.
And so they're having this sort of nice meal, and we get to see the newspaper, which has got a front page picture of Poor Man's M.
Yeah. When was this newspaper printed, do you reckon? Like, is it a morning paper? Is it an afternoon paper? Is it an evening gazette? Because around around about what time of day is it? This is in my notes as well. Around about what time of day is it that they're having this meal?
Sort of like, it's lunchtime, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, it's not dinner, it is lunch.
Yeah.
So this must be a morning paper, I'm assuming.
Yes, with a photograph that was taken that morning.
Yes! Yes, exactly. Probably after the paper went into circulation. What the hell? Okay, whatever. All right. Doc recognizes Blonfell, Foch, Pasimir, they, Slaveen. And goes, well, fuck, guys, we need to go and pay the mayor a visit.
So they Reservoir Dogs over to the city hall.
Nice, yeah.
And they go in, and for people who are just tuning in, Jack recaps the end of World War III, even though he wasn't in the episode.
I did not make a note of that. That's so true. Okay. Well, presumably that's all they've been talking about since they picked him up in the TARDIS.
Yeah. So he recaps it for the harder thinking. They split up to cover the exits, and the Doctor goes to speak to poor man Zem.
Yeah. Which is hilarious, by the way.
This scene is actually quite good.
Oh, it's so nicely done.
He talks to a sort of personal private secretary.
Yeah.
And the secretary goes in and says, sorry, can you make an appointment? She's just having a cup of tea. And the doctor turns around. She's climbing out the window, isn't she?
And the guy just nods. It's so good.
And then we get a chase sequence.
Yeah.
Mickey is not exactly a time-traveling hero by falling over carts, putting his feet in toilet paper, putting his feet in a bucket, and generally allowing Margaret to escape and activate a teleporter.
Yeah, goddamn Mickey Ricky. But then we get a kind of a fun scene where, well, fun and fun, you know, whatever. It's a little bit slapsticky where she activates the teleporter, runs off, boom, teleports away. The Doctor does some timey-wimey stuff with his sonic screwdriver, and she teleports back right in front of them, turns around, rinse and repeat.
We get a really interesting line from Rose here.
Oh yeah,
where Rose says to Jack, the Doctor is very good with teleports, and this is exactly what he did to Cassandra in The End of the World, where he reversed her teleport.
Oh, you're right. Yeah,
so that's why Rose says the Doctor is very good with teleports.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, remind me, what happens next? Do they go up to the office, essentially, little presentation room?
Yes.
Right, okay, so they head upstairs, they've captured her now, they head upstairs, and it... It's a little bit weird because they see this massive plan, this model of Cardiff, and in the middle of the model is the model nuclear power plant. And for some reason, the power plant itself, if you lift it up out of the model that is there in plain view of all... People have been watching this model for hours. She held a freaking presentation there with tons of people around. For some reason, she has hidden a device, a very specific device, underneath this model. Or inside the actual power plant. Why? Why is it there?
Nope, can't answer that one.
No, it's quite annoying.
The device, which is a tribophysical waveform macrokinetic extrapolator...
Fuck, that's exactly the line that I've been practicing!
Is in fact a surfboard.
Yes. It's a pan-dimensional surfboard. God damn it, that's the one line that I've been practicing. I even had a cheat sheet.
And basically what's going to happen is she's going to blow up Cardiff and the surfboard will encase her in a bubble and she will surf off like the Silver Surfer away from the world.
Yeah, she's going to ride the shockwave, which I think is the phrase she uses. But why is it there? Like, there is no...
No, there's no reason.
No, it's just dumb. It's like it's a Scooby-Doo villain's logic. Like, I'm going to hide this right in front of everyone. Last place they're going
to
look.
And then the Doctor starts to have a query about why the power plant project is called Blythe Droog.
Yeah, another good scene, by the way.
Yeah, and Blythe Droog, of course, is Welsh for bad wolf.
Yeah, but it's a really fun... Not fun, it's got, like, this queasy kind of tension to it, where he seems to realise that he recognises it from somewhere, and he goes, like, why did you call it that? Like, I feel like I've seen that phrase on so many occasions, I've heard it said, I've read it all over the place, different times, different places, and then all of a sudden he just turns around and goes, like, nah, coincidence. So... Very funny, I think.
Russell T. Davis nicknamed the theme that you can hear in the background when this is going on, the sort of the female voice.
Yeah.
Ooh, as Chancellor Flavia's theme. It was a character in Five Doctors.
Okay.
Because Murray Gold, the musical coordinator, would play this when it got very sort of Time Lordy in the background.
Yeah.
So anytime when there's sort of really important plot happening, you tend to get that theme.
That does continue throughout Tenant as well, doesn't it?
Yes, doesn't it?
Yeah. All right. So anyway, God damn it, I can't believe I practiced that line so many times. So the next step is they're going to take her back to Raxacorico Falabatorius, where she is most likely, she says, most likely she is going to be executed, because it is well known to all of her species that the Slitheen family is just a family of hoodlums. Like, they're just criminals. But the Doctor thinks, yeah, that's fine. You know what? You deserve it. You tried to kill humanity. You deserve it. And then Jack has some input about the tribophysical waveform microkinetic extrapolator. I got it in. There you go. Namely, that they can use that to boost the charging of the TARDIS. So they take it with them. Right? Am I misremembering that? No. Okay, no. So that is happening. So anyway, they head off to the TARDIS and plug the surfboard to the console. I wonder if that's going to in some way factor into an evil plot later on. Yes, spoiler alert, it will. And it is kind of weird, because now we get Blondfell Foch, Captain Jack, and the Doctor in the TARDIS, and they plan to basically just sit it out. They're going to, according to the Doctor and Jack anyway, they're just going to sit it out, wait it out until the TARDIS is fully charged. And in the meantime, Rose goes off to have a date, essentially, with Mickey Ricky. But the feeling that I got of them being in the TARDIS, before we go into dialogue, and what's in my notes is also, like, it reflected this, I got the sensation that we were basically just going to be in for an Edge of Discretion kind of episode, except with a farting grumpy lady.
Yeah. Yeah. And sadly, we don't get anything anywhere near as good as Edge of Destruction.
Anyway, shall we cut over to Rose and Mickey Ricky?
Yeah. Anyway, we get a lot of tension and Mickey leaves.
I feel like there's something else we need to point out here.
Go on.
Namely, that Mickey Ricky... And this is premeditated. He's already dating someone else, but he has brought money for a hotel room because he plans on shacking up and plowing Rose. He wants to cheat on his current girlfriend with his ex, because he clearly considers Rose his ex, right? He is in a different relationship, but still, before he reveals that, he just goes, yeah, well, do you want to maybe get a hotel room and, you know, have sex?
At this point, Rose just continues to vacillate between her desire for the Doctor and a desire for Ricky. And in this 5-minute segment, she likes Ricky.
Yeah, but that's not my point. Yeah. He's a cheating bastard. He is completely prepared and has made plans to cheat on his girlfriend. This guy is such a douchebag.
Let's wait a little bit.
Okay.
Until, I think, a few scenes later with the two of them.
Okay.
Because I think it's a little bit more explainable later on.
Yeah, sure. I still think he's an asshole. But yeah, okay, I know what you're going to get at. Anyway, so back in the TARDIS now.
Yeah, so the Doc's miserable because Mickey and Rose are going off for dinner. We get a scene between Margaret and the Doc.
Yeah. It's really well written.
Yes, it's really well written. And it's really well acted.
Yeah. And weirdly, I think it's a testament to the fact that the Raxacorico Falabatorians could actually be good, solid, believable characters.
Which wasn't shown in Aliens of London.
Not at all.
It's only shown in this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the outcome of the scene is that the Doc is going to take Margaret out for dinner for her last request.
Yeah.
Wearing a set of bracelets that if she gets more than 10 feet away from the Doctor, she will get fried.
Right.
Margaret is actually incredibly good in this scene. Her last line is so probably weird. My favourite from the episode.
Oh, really? It's such a weird line, I think. Do you want a soundbite?
Yeah, let's soundbite. Let the viewers decide. Soundbite? Yeah.
Soundbite!
Dinner in bondage. Works for me.
Well, it's a pity this is Doctor number 9, or 10, depending on your numbering system.
9, as you'll see, I've corrected that mistake on the website.
If he'd been 8, he could have shown her, you know, Catriona Olsen's bondage closet, or, you know, or Lucy Miller's Portal of Irving.
Yum.
So, they're going to a bistro.
Yeah.
We now get a really, really good scene.
Yeah, I think so.
Where she tries to kill the Doctor 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And the Doctor just stops her every single time.
Super casually.
And Oh yeah, but Eccleston and Badland are obviously doing very well in this scene. You know, yeah. they're both very capable actors, and they're both in very tight close-up.
Mm.
You know, they're having to act without doing very much physical comedy, apart from what you can do with sort of like the hands in the frame of a camera. And I think they do incredibly well. I like agree. The scene.
I have a question about the scene, though.
Of course.
One of the ways in which she tries to kill him, I think actually the first way, is she says, oh, did you know that the Braxacoracophallopatorians can shoot out a poisonous dart from their finger when threatened or something like that? And she does, and he catches it. The fact that he catches it, and very casually just goes, boom, plucks it out of the air. It's like a bullet coming at him, and he just plucks it out. Would you say that he's using the same method, whatever method it was, that he employed in N002 End of the World, where
yes.
he slowed time to walk through that propeller in the well-ventilated room of death?
Yes, in Pertwee episode Invasion of the Dinosaurs, where he's shown to be hardly affected by temporal things and the
okay.
time monster as well.
Okay. Cool. All right.
So,
confirmed.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think he is. So,
right.
we skip over to Rose and Mickey.
Yeah.
Mickey now reveals he's dating Trisha Delaney.
Yeah, I apologize. I jumped the gun before.
And Rose is a bit shocked. We then go back to the restaurant. There's a lot of cutting here. We go back to the restaurant, and Margaret is now begging for her life by telling the doctor that she's going to be dissolved in a vat of acid.
Oh, so awesome. Really gruesome way of executing someone.
Yeah, I mean,
hey, Geneva, where have you been?
Yeah, sorry. And then the doctor sort of reminds her that it's no point pleading because you actually killed the real Margaret Blaine and
yeah.
you're wearing her skin. So
yeah.
I have moral high ground here.
Yeah, fair enough.
Skip back to our favourite Mickey and Rose. Now...
Yeah, this is what you wanted to say, right?
Yeah. Mickey reveals precisely how angry he is at Rose.
Bullshit. Okay, no,
I disagree.
Okay, no, sorry. Not, it's not bullshit. I believe that he is angry because she left him and whatever, blah, blah, blah. He did, however, he was offered the chance to come along by the doctor. He declined. He is, cheating piece of shit. He is in a different relationship.
Right. Two things. First of all.
And he's a shit actor in this scene as well. I'm sorry. The delivery is not believable at all. He does not do angry and sad at the same time very well. Not in my opinion.
First of all, he didn't go along with the doctor because he was scared, which is a very, you know, reasonable thing to be.
Sure.
After everything that he'd heard and aliens being in London and stuff like that.
Sure.
He was scared and didn't want to go time traveling.
Yeah.
Reasonable.
Sort of. Yeah, okay.
Right. He obviously is dating Trisha Delaney on the rebound from Rose.
Yeah.
And probably doesn't want to be dating Trisha Delaney. And if Rose was to say, well, I'm staying on Earth, would dump Trisha Delaney.
Yeah.
And
your point being he's not a douchebag? I mean,
yeah.
at some point he was back on the
is.
Estate. Dude, at some point he was back on the estate. He's dating Trisha Delaney. He wakes up next to Trisha, gives her a little bit of a smooch, and goes, how much money do I have? I'm going to earmark this for lunch. I'm going to earmark this for blah, blah. And then I'm going to earmark this wad of cash, this sweaty wad of cash, for a goddamn hotel room, some roofies, and a six-pack of condoms. Boom.
I do not necessarily think he's being particularly a douche. And...
Okay. Agree to disagree.
Yes, but I've got an even bigger problem with this scene.
Oh, really?
Well, I've got a bigger problem with you in this scene.
With me?
With what you said about this scene.
Oh, I see. Wow, Jesus. I thought this was some sort of weird personal attack. Okay, yeah, go for it.
Once again, like, you know, I had to do for the episode Rose, Noel, if you're listening to this... I'm really sorry that Leon has just said that you can't act in this scene and you can't do angry and sad at the same time. Most humans can't do angry and sad at the same time either. So, you know, it's
completely untrue. That is completely untrue.
I think you're a good actor. And I think you're a good actor in this scene. So if you're listening to this, which you probably are.
And I hope you are.
Then I'm really sorry. Please don't in any way sue Leon
yeah.
for...
Noel.
Liable.
Noel, listen
and
up.
I think, and I personally think you're actually really good in this scene. And in my notes, I will read verbatim, Noel, what I've written about this scene for you.
Okay.
Okay, Rose is a bitch, Mickey's slightly whooped, and frankly, Mickey here is fairly sympathetic. Thanks for listening.
Okay, Noel, hang on, wait, don't hang up just yet. Don't stop listening just yet. No, listen, the thing is, you may have been very poorly directed in this scene, but I have to say, and I am really sorry to say this, and I know that you've done lots of other stuff, and you were really good in other stuff, but in this scene, kind of feel like you didn't really sell it. And the thing is, I already have a bit of sympathy for you as a human being, because your first name is my first name backwards. And it's a shame that JD's muted his microphone, because that was a great laugh. But do you want to come on the show and defend yourself? Are you going to pick up what I'm putting down, Noel? Anyway, this turned really weird really quickly. Let's get back to the show. Noel, thank you for listening.
Anyway, back to the restaurant. Margaret's pleading is now, well, she allowed the journalist to live. And the doctor turns around and just actually now calls her on her bullshit.
Yeah.
And said, okay, you did it once, but you're about to blow up Cardiff.
Yeah.
And he points out basically what you said. But
yeah.
She points out that, well, takes one to know one. And
ooh, yeah.
If I can allow, you know, someone to live just like that, so can you. So back to Mickey and Rose.
Mm.
Mickey's basically saying, right, when you've finished your time traveling malarkey, please come home. And we never really end the scene because then
yeah, they're interrupted.
The Cardiff Rift starts going utterly, utterly crazy.
Yeah.
And Rose runs off and leaves him.
Yeah, and I'll agree. Agree to an extent that Mickey Rickey as a character, not his portrayal, but as a character, theoretically, he is actually quite sympathetic here. But I still cannot get over the fact that he planned to cheat on his girlfriend. And why doesn't he run after Rose when she runs off as well? Like, clearly
she's running towards what might be an earthquake, a thunderstorm, or, you know, aliens landing in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
You
and this
don't
is like,
do that.
Yeah, but freaking Mickey Rickey has just said, pretty much, I will do anything for you. I would die for you. I will wait forever for you. In brackets, while I bang Trisha Delaney. But I will do anything for you. She runs off to save the Doctor or TARDIS or the world or Cardiff or whatever. Clearly, she's risking her life for the benefit of someone else or other people in general. And he just stays put and is angry and goes, yeah, well, you just go choose your fucking doctor then. Fuck you, Mickey Rickey, you absolute ass.
He's not a hero.
Yeah.
He's one of the normal people who doesn't run in, well, for a few episodes anyway. He doesn't run into this sort of wacky craziness.
Okay, but you know what?
Because he's scared.
Yeah, but there are lots of different ways to be a hero. He doesn't just have to take a bullet for Rose or cover her whilst temporal energy or radiation or whatever it is that's coming out of the rift burns everything to ash. Like, he could, let's say, for instance, try to convince her not to run or stop her or hold on to her and keep telling her, listen, no, I don't want you to come to any harm. He doesn't. He just gets angry. He's an asswipe.
We'll disagree on that.
Okay.
We cut back to
the restaurant.
Bistro of Doom.
Yeah.
And Margaret's plan now is to convince him it's not her fault, it was how she was brought up. Here's a little trivia fact for you.
Okay.
Her father, when she was 13, basically sent her on her first hunting party.
Okay.
If she didn't, what was going to happen to her? She was going to be fed to the venom grubs.
Where are you getting this from?
Watching it.
Oh, is this... does she say this in this episode?
Yes. She says it just now. Yeah. She says she was going to be fed to venom grubs.
Okay.
Now, the trivia point here is in the novelization of The Web Planet, which was done by Bill Strutton, who wrote The Web Planet.
Oh, I just got whatever the opposite of a boner is.
The larvae guns, the beep.
Yeah.
Things were actually called venom grubs.
Oh, really?
Which means that there is a direct link between the Raxacorico Phalloptorians and the Web Planet. Strangely enough, two of my least favourite episodes.
Wow.
Anyway, the rift goes nuts.
Yeah, it does. It opens up. There's like tons of energy shooting out through the TARDIS or out through the rift, through the TARDIS, into the sky. There's like a crazy earthquake. There's a storm. Windows are exploding. It's all just this crazy havoc. And the Doctor and Blon rush off to the TARDIS to, like, save the day. And Rose does as well, obviously.
Yeah, so Jack reveals that the surfboard is going crazy. It's, even though he's unplugged it, yeah, it's still feeding off the power. And basically, they're threatening to open the rift and tear the entire planet apart.
The Doctor now realises, holy crap, this was her plan all along.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
As Rose turns up, and then Margaret...
Boom. Takes a chokehold on her.
Yeah. Basically, as a plan B, she had reprogrammed the surfboard to tap into alien energy supplies.
Yeah.
To open the rift in space-time.
Right.
And she's about to surfboard it out. So, at this point...
Another first in New Who.
I'm going to pause.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to give this episode a 3.8.
Oh, that's brilliant. That is awesome. Okay, yes. Fine. Up until this point, I sort of agree with you. I would give it maybe a 3.5. Yes.
You're a genius. I'm going to mark it up to this point.
Oh,
and if the episode had ended here,
yeah,
then it would be up there with some of the really good episodes of New Who, because Annette Badland, brilliant. Chris Eccleston, brilliant.
Yeah.
Captain Jack, brilliant.
Yeah.
Rose and Mickey, well, they're having a lover's chat. Okay, so what next time, Bad Wolf. the episode hasn't finished, has it?
No, it hasn't. There's one tiny little bit left. So the Doctor now opens up the TARDIS console and...
No, the Doctor doesn't open up the TARDIS console.
Oh, it opens itself.
The TARDIS console opens itself.
Holy shit, that's even worse than I thought. Okay, that I didn't catch. It opens itself and... okay, fine, alright, okay. So now the heart of the TARDIS, which I think is also a first in New Who, reveals itself, shines its glorious light upon Blondfellforge Pass and somehow telepathically links with her.
What happens here?
Yeah.
The TARDIS console opens.
Yeah.
Shines its light on Margaret. Margaret becomes an egg. That is exactly what happens. So, and then the Doctor basically turns around
but
and says,
it happens
the TARDIS...
Go for it, sorry.
The TARDIS, my TARDIS, the best ship in the universe, is also telepathic. Basically, it's locked onto Margaret's thoughts,
yeah,
and it has regressed her back to childhood so she can have a second chance.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically, everything. Right. I have so many problems with this. There is a list.
Okay. All right. Yeah, go for it.
Right.
I'll agree with you that I think it's a shit plot point, but yeah, go for it.
Dear ever-loving whatever, right? This is almost... Love is solving the problem again. It's like Stephen Moffat wrote it. It is the single...
Oh, I disagree, because I think Stephen Moffat writes some pretty dang good episodes.
It's the single, literal, most deus ex machina ending in Doctor Who.
Well, it is. Actually, it's literally a deus ex machina.
A deus ex machina. Well, until the season finale, which will be a bigger deus ex machina. But this makes no sense. This is like Edge of Destruction being a paragon of plotting compared to this. The telepathic TARDIS has opened up regressing people like it has never shown the power to do before. Just because a very bad person who wants to commit practically genocide, who wants to kill everyone...
Not practically,
...thought she deserved a second chance. What the actual fuck. But not only that, what they have managed to do here is get rid of the single best bit of this episode by having the TARDIS as a deus ex machina, which was... The Doctor here is meant to be choosing whether Margaret lives or dies. This is the point of the episode, the morality of death. And
yeah,
this
and
is
it's just
to have
it's
the
taken
right
out
to
of
kill
his hands. Yeah.
By something which has never happened before and will only actually ever happen once again, once more, which was another episode also written by Russell T. Davies. I love you, Russell. You brought Doctor Who back to us. This is shit. So.
Okay, but I disagree.
Your turn.
Okay, yeah, all right. So clearly you've given this much more thought than I have, or at least much better thought than I have, because I have not got into that death. But yes, you are absolutely right. I completely agree with you. What pisses me off here is that we lose that tension between the two. However, I don't think that we lose the chance for the Doctor to make a choice here. As in, he could still take this shitty Slitheen egg, crack it open and make himself an omelette and go, you know what? Passing me a day, really don't think that you deserve a second chance. But instead he does. Like, he picks that. So he does pick a very sort of child-friendly approach.
I don't think he's given a choice here. He has regressed. The TARDIS has regressed Blon back to an egg.
What, you think the TARDIS takes the choice out of his hands? Like, makes the choice for him, basically?
Yes.
Okay. Well, tell me this then, because this absolutely pisses me off as well. Why does Blon deserve a second chance and no other evil character that we've encountered so far? This is the 11th episode of New Who.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what makes a difference?
There have been other times when there have been evil forces in, you know, the TARDIS. I can think of the Malice in The Awakening, the Cybermen in Earthshock, the Cybermen in, I think, Attack of the Cybermen as well.
Yeah.
You know, any number of things in The Five Doctors, The Invasion of Time, you know, any time anyone has come on board the TARDIS, why didn't it just go globby and light up?
Rewind, and, fast return. Okay, yeah, no, go for it. Finish your point, sorry.
No, I'm totally agreeing with you here. There is no reason why this couldn't have done it in the past or couldn't have done it in the future.
Okay. I've made one more note about this as well.
It could have stopped Clara's death in The Snowman by doing its wibbly wobbly thing on the person that was going to kill Clara. And it's just like,
This never happens again, right?
No.
Yeah, exactly. And
the TARDIS console opens its gaping jaw once more.
Okay, sure. But it doesn't do
which
this.
Which we will get to.
But it's not shown to have this ability, right?
No, it doesn't even more powerful next time.
Okay, all right. But at the very... Fine, so there are two occasions in New Who, but the TARDIS is not shown to interact with its surroundings to this extent and take an actual moral stand, decide what is morally correct and pursue that course of action. It doesn't do that anymore. And I reckon it was written, it was produced, it was published and, you know, publicized. And then several episodes later, they went, holy shit, we've invented this thing that can actually solve every single episode. We have to unwrite that. And, well, not unwrite that. We just have to never touch upon that again. Because otherwise, you have no adventure. You have this box that just magically fixes everything. But I've made one more note about this scene, and I feel like there's a very religious tinge to this scene. Essentially, this is, at the very end of her life, Blon regrets her sins when she gazes upon this pseudo-religious light, this sort of angelic gloria. It regrets her sins, and because she regrets her sins and sort of accepts the light of the TARDIS, she is absolved by the TARDIS. Like, she was on her way to hell, more or less. She was on her way to go and be melted alive. But because she regrets everything, when she looks into this gorgeous white light, she is given a second chance.
Yep, that's exactly what happens. And I think you're right that it does have that sort of feel about it.
Mm.
And I would be... Because it was written by Russell T. Davis, who has in the past received death threats for an atheist message in a TV show.
Really?
Yeah, he received it for the Second Coming, which, surprisingly enough, starred Chris Eccleston.
Oh, cool.
Russell T. Davis is not doing the Doctor Who as religious figure here. He will, later on, do it quite poorly in Last of the Time Lords.
Mm-hmm.
It does look like what you're saying, but I don't think it was deliberately written that way.
Okay.
But it is very, very... It does feel like that, but I don't think it was intended.
Okay, all right. Either way, bing, bam, boom, we get one tiny little end note before we can get rid of this episode, and that is Mickey Ricky, should he stay, should he go, should Rose rush after him? She goes, you know what? Blonde isn't the only person who deserves a second chance. Mickey Ricky does as well. And she lets him go. And that's it. Oh, you disagree. There's something else. I've forgotten something.
I disagree with that scene.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Rose basically goes looking for Mickey. And he basically walks away from her.
Okay, all right.
And then you're right. And then
she doesn't follow him. She doesn't stop him or anything. She just lets him leave.
Well, she doesn't see him.
Oh, I see. No, sorry, I'm misremembering it in that case.
He sees Rose, but he leaves. He doesn't go after her. He just leaves. And that is probably more poignant for Mickey's character.
Yeah, because he's now given up on her. He's not going to wait anymore.
Yeah, and I think that the thing about this scene is that Mickey has grown as a person far more than he had done when you think back to Rose.
I really don't feel like he's grown that much as a person. I just feel like, okay, now he's over her, or he's realized that he's not going to win her back, at the very least not now, and he's going to go back to his girlfriend. But mainly, I just think he's angry, because the last time we saw Mickey Rickey, he was shouting at her, he was screaming after her, going like, yeah, well, go and choose your doctor, or something to that effect. And now he sees her again. He has still been waiting around to see her. He sees her, doesn't approach her, and I think this is just residual anger. He just goes, yeah, well, she chose the doctor. F her. And then he leaves.
Yeah, even though she has come, you know, quite obviously looking for him.
Okay.
He is the one at this point who is the bigger person and turns around and leaves her. And frankly, that's the right thing to do at this point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, maybe now he will go back to Trisha Delaney and sort of live a happy sort of life.
Do we meet Trisha Delaney later on?
No, but we find out that he basically isn't with her anymore.
All right.
He is still pining over Rose.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Anyway, end of episode.
Yes.
Reviews.
You first.
Okay. First of all, I have to say, well done, JD, for splitting the rating up into two. Because of the ending, yes, it does go down a little bit. But there are a few redeeming factors to this episode. It's impossible to not compare this to Aliens of London and World War III. We have the Raxacoraco Philippatorians again. Well, we have one of them. But there's very little farting. There is that one diuretic kind of scene. There's no vulgar, let's get naked and run around and have our loins out in the open while we hunt humans type action. There's an actual character development to Blon, and I have to mark up for that. I really appreciate that. I think, as a species, the Raxacoraco blah 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 ones, they gained a little bit of respect. Like, as characters, they are believable, they are interesting. I would happily have that kind of interaction with them. Or maybe, one might say, this episode is out of character for Blon and the Raxacoracos. So, either way, I think that's very good. Glad that we've got something more believable there. I love Jack in this. I think that's great. I dislike Mickey Rickey's presence in this one, but he leaves. I think that's great. And then we get all the plot holes, things that I have to mark down for. Why is she still wearing the same suit? Makes no sense. Why is the surfboard in the middle of the plan? Makes no sense. Or of the model? Makes no sense whatsoever. There are so many things that just annoy me. I would not have made a note of this had you not pointed this out during our Unquiet Dead review, namely that the rift has suddenly changed location. That pisses me off now. Thanks for ruining the rift for me, JD. So, given all of these things, I'll keep it very short. Given all of these things, I'm bumping it back down. I'm enjoying the bad wolf scene, I'm enjoying the she's climbing out the window scene, I'm enjoying lots of stuff, but there's tons of stuff, including the rubbish ending that we just discussed ad nauseum, that drag this down, so I'm taking it down from, what did I give it before? Egg?
3.5.
I'm giving it a 2.9.
Okay. Well, you do get glimpses here of a very good episode. You get glimpses of greatness behind a facade of cardboard. There's less farting, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
But the first 10 minutes, you have fart jokes. It's like they forgot about them halfway through. That is literally what happened. Annette Badland is far better here than she was in Aliens of London and World War III. She shines more away from the comedy. The serious bits she does very well at. But as I said earlier, this is an episode about morality. It's about death and how it's right or wrong for capital punishment. Then it is ruined by the worst deus ex machina this side of a spring being faulty in the Space Museum. You know, literally, the TARDIS solves all the problems of this episode. There is fuck and all consequence to the main characters here. All of their discussions, all of the great, great scenes which occurred between Annette Badland and Chris Eccleston in the TARDIS and then in the bistro are thrown out the window. There's like no reason for them to have been a part of this episode. Captain Jack is almost wasted in the episode. He has a few good moments, of course, and John Barrowman is great. But it is like the episode was written without him, and then he was dropped in.
Yeah. No, you're right.
I want to like this episode. I really do. It's got good acting. It's got a great script for about 20 out of the 45 minutes. It's got character development and the farting aliens fart less. But I can't. I cannot like this episode. Because the ending takes away from the character's decisions, from the consequence, the Deus Ex Machina is just ridiculous. As I said earlier, I'd have given this a 3.8, somewhere between 3.5 and 4. The ending has managed to knock that completely off the scale, and I'm giving this a unforgivable 1.5.
You're right, that 1.5 is unforgivable. Wow, you make a lot of good points, but I think we should all just take a really deep breath and acknowledge the awesome nature of anything, any serial or any episode to which you will give a lower score than I will.
Yep.
That's pretty good.
It was that bad for me. there is only one other episode that I can think of which has an even bigger cop-out, and we'll get to that pretty soon.
Oh, I look forward to it. Listener minis. So, our first mini review comes from Robert M. Albrecht. Robert M. Albrecht, how you doing, dude? First official German fan. Rob has written a mini. Rob goes, more farting aliens. Did they recycle some leftover footage? This episode was solely written to establish the rift for Torchwood. Very true, dude. Very true. It does not advance the Doctor Who series, he says. And he concludes with, could it please get lost with some of the classic episodes? 1 out of 5. Holy crap. That's pretty harsh. Interesting. What do you say, JD?
It's harsher than I was. Yeah. The only thing I would never want to wish on anything is
to get lost.
Is to get lost. After so many, that's the only thing I disagree with. But I hated this episode.
Yeah.
I did the ending. We've been through this.
Yeah, yeah.
I will continue to go through it.
Yeah, in case you missed that, ladies and gentlemen, just rewind about 5 minutes. Okie dokie. Rob, thank you very much. Still don't know if Rob is on Twitter. He might be. If you find him, point him in our direction. Okie dokie.
Let's move over to Gallifrey and Buccaneer.
Gallifrey and Buccaneer, hello, how you doing?
Hello, Alan. Alan's Boomtown Mini begins. I have no ideas how you guys will react to this one, so I'm just going to put on my Slovene apologist hat. Well, okay, it's obviously more of a you on this one.
Boomtown is clearly a cheap story. Shot in Cardiff, the home of New Who, it has no major CGI elements beyond lightning and earthquake effects, and reuses old characters and costumes, saving time and money. Cheap doesn't necessarily mean bad. Blink was made on the cheap, look how good that turned out. What we get out of this is a wonderful character study of both Rose and Mickey, as well as the Doctor and Blon. We also get a nice breezy adventure with Captain Jack on the TARDIS team, something we really didn't get enough of.
Boomtown has the unfortunate placement of coming right after the superb Empty Child and Doctor Dancers, which used its budget well on sets, CGI where needed, and the costumes, Captain Jack's inaccurate uniform aside. I hasten to say that, in brackets, was written by Buccaneer, not just my comment.
Yeah.
It's followed by the finale of the series, which clearly is going to have a fair bit of money spent on it, plus Daleks, plus an amazing performance from everyone involved. Oops, jumping the gun a bit here. You get my point, though. It's a bare-bones story slotted between two of the most well-crafted stories in New Who. Of course, it's going to look a bit out of place.
He goes on, despite this, this story comes out well for me. Frankly, any story that delves into the morality of the Doctor gets a plus from me. You could argue it's done better in Dalek, and certainly in a less on-the-nose way.
The dinner scene between Eccleston and Badland just shows two prime actors executing some brilliant dialogue. It's the highlight of the episode. The Doctor having dinner with a murderous scheming enemy who begs for her life. The characters here all show what it's like to be changed. Rose and Mickey's relationship is fraught with trouble as a date on the bay descends into arguing as Mickey feels inadequate next to the Doctor and Rose's relationship. The Doctor is so changed by the Time War that he's become cold, no longer merciful. Just look at the parallels here. Every now and then, a little victim spared because she smiled, because he's got freckles, because they begged, and that's how you live with yourself. That's how you slaughter millions.
Such a good line.
This is fantastically written by Russell T. Davis, and it may be a theme that returns often in New Who. But this scene, and many in Dalek, I think, encapsulate the post-Time War Doctor.
Very nicely put, Gallifrey and Buccaneer. Buccaneer goes on. The other beauty in this episode is that it's funny. Even for such a heavy scene as the dinner date, we get some humour. The business with the poison drink and poison dart is hilarious, and Eccleston's grin at steak and chips is a particular favourite moment of mine from his entire run on the show. The TARDIS team are having such fun early in this episode, as they swap stories, and even when they chase Margaret. Even if it's a bit of Benny Hill type humour, the teleporting of a fleeing alien closer and closer with such nonchalance is just great comedy.
The fact that she's a Slovene isn't that relevant to the message of the story. It could be a Zygon the Doctor takes to dinner, and it wouldn't be any more or less powerful a scene. There's only one fart gag, so even if you're not a fan of that, giving the Slovene a reason to dislike the story isn't really valid, as that isn't the point of it at all.
Completely agree with you. Buccaneer concludes, "Also, as a guy from South Wales, I still get a kick from seeing the Doctor in Cardiff, outside the Millennium Centre, down the bay, even eating in a restaurant I've been to. A bit pricey, wouldn't recommend." Thank you for the tip. I imagine it's what Londoners feel when he's cycling up the Shard or running past Big Ben.
So Buccaneer concludes with saying that he'd give Boomtown a solid 3.8, which oddly enough is what I gave it before the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much, Alan. If you aren't Alan R. Trussler, please follow him on Twitter. He is at Alan Trussler. That's Trussler with two S's.
Please
follow him.
If I could, I'd follow him twice. Alan, thank you. Awesome mini.
So that was the last of Eccleston's single-parters. Next time we get, obviously at the end of the episode, we get the next time trailer for Bad Wolf, which looks like it's going to be full of British reality TV. Which I, oddly enough, am a real fan of.
Nice.
Except Big Brother. Can't stand Big Brother. But we get that next time. And of course, it's a two-part season finale.
Yes, it is. So stay tuned for that one. Thank you so much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed this review.
So that has been Boomtown, which is one of the ones we've disagreed on.
Yeah.
Which is always good for fun and discussion.
I think it should be called Kablamo Village for one. That was way funnier in my head when I thought of it. Okay.
You have this real thing about kablamming, don't you?
Yeah.
There's a kablamming going on here.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan. But yes, you're
anyway,
right.
Anyway, if you're not Ponken, you can follow him. He is at Ponken.
Here's how you spell it.
Ponken, Ponken.
And if you're not me, you can follow me. I am at Marius Kane.
That is Kane with a K. Thank you again for listening. Be rad and excellent to each other.
It's been wonderful.
Ciao, ciao. Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what you know in your heart to be the right thing and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Like us on Facebook, that's facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Find us on Google Plus, that's plus Who Back When, all in one word. And follow or add or like us there. I have no idea what it's called on Google Plus, but if you're on Google Plus, then you should do that. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, and have a peek around our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which is increasing in badassdom by the day. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really would, but we're also planning a pretty fun surprise for everyone who has. That's it. Rock on, and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who review, New Who review, or Audio Who review. Ciao, ciao.
Who Back When?